Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this very special segment of the Star Wars Report. I'm super excited about an interview we've got coming up. But before we jump into all that, welcome to a brand new episode of the Star Wars Report. And Mark, you're with us again. Once again, how you doing, man?
Hey, here and excited as always. Whistler's pretty excited. We got some crazy cold action out here in the Hoth basement at Rogue Studios.
I saw that. How cold is it right now? I've got to see what kind of suffering you're enduring.
Let's see. Right now, actually, my heater has heated it up. We are up to 46 degrees.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine. I'll tell you what, as a Georgia boy, that's insane. And of course, as always, my dear sister, Bethany Blanton.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Riley.
Yes.
And Mark.
What's
I've been meaning to tell you about something.
What's going on?
I listened to this awesome new show.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Rebel Force Radio, in case you haven't heard of it.
Oh, wait. What did you just say?
What it's called Rebel Force Radio.
Oh.
Introducing Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Weekly live shows and podcasts.
Rebel Force Radio.
You are on the front lines of fandom by listening to this show.
Jimmy Mack and Jason Swank usher in a new era of Star Wars podcasting.
Rebel Force Radio.
RFR.
Like Rebel Force Radio on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Stay tuned for special announcements about the Rebel Force Radio official webpage.
Leaving no Star Wars fan behind.
Rebel Force Radio.
Your new source for the Force.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome to the program Mr. Jimmy Mack from...
Hey, guys.
Rebel Force Radio. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
We are doing fantastic, let me say. I've had the privilege of doing some interviews that I never thought I would get to do since we started the Star Wars Report podcast about a year and a half ago. And this certainly takes the cake. It's one of the ones I'm very excited to do. I'm not even going to let you talk. I'm just going to steal some time right here, just take a minute or two. And a lot of our listeners are going to think I'm going to gush, and I don't care. I started listening to what was then the Forcecast. For you guys have this exciting new era that you have, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But I started listening to you guys back in February 2008 or so. And I just want to say this site and my involvement in the Star Wars community any kind of being a Star Wars fan at all beyond just the cursory level would not be possible, would not have happened if it weren't for listening to the Forcecast. And I'm super excited to talk to you because you've been a big inspiration for me as well as Jason. I'm sorry you couldn't be here, but you guys certainly have been out on the front lines really doing a professional job in Star Wars podcasting. So it is awesome to be talking to you, man.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I remember back in those days, and Riley was like, Bethany, you've got to listen to this. It's the Forcecast podcast. I'm like, cool. What's a podcast?
That's kind of what it was like, though, back in the day. But I'll tell you what, man. You've got the Rebel Force Radio. We've got a brand new era. But before we get into that, I just wanted to ask you a question that I've never heard anyone ask you guys.
Okay.
When you guys started podcasting, I know Jason started a year or two before you joined in on what was then the Forcecast. How has that changed you as a Star Wars fan?
Well, the core of my fandom remains the same, and that's never changed. And I've always been a Star Wars fan 365 days a year, 7 days a week, 24 hours around the clock. So, but what it's given me specifically is a sense of personal fulfillment, because for the longest time, I was fans of web pages on the internet, and I would sort of be on the outside looking in on the forums and whatnot. You know, I would what do you call that when you go to forums and you never post anything?
Lurking.
You're,
I do that all the time.
Oh my God, I was such a lurker. And, I wasn't really into building websites, and I didn't know anything about writing code or anything like that, but I always felt like I wanted to give something back to the Star Wars fan community. I felt like I had a message that I wanted to share with them. And I started to use my position as a guy who works in radio as a professional to sort of get that word out. So I found myself covering events for local radio stations like the premieres of the Star Wars Special Editions back in 97. And then, of course, all the prequel films, I would be involved in some way, shape, or form on the air, doing bits, chatting about Star Wars with whoever wanted to talk to me about it. And then by the time of episode 3, I had convinced the management and my radio station, WCKG in Chicago, that it would be a good idea to let me do an hour-long Star Wars radio special. And I would go to Indiana to this convention called Star Wars Celebration, mm-hmm. and I'd gather up interviews with actors from the films. And they thought, oh, yeah, whatever, let him do whatever he wants, you know, throw the kid a bone. So I did just that. I went out to Indiana and recorded with tons of actors, came back with some great audio that I had a ton of fun putting together, and I created this hour-long WCKG Star Wars radio special and had probably the most fun in my career putting that thing together. And I wanted to do more after that, but Star Wars essentially fell off the map at that point because there were going to be no more films after 2005 and Revenge of the Sith. So I just sort of, you know, felt my fandom almost slipping away. And it concerned me a great deal. I said, oh my God, am I losing my Star Wars passion? What is this? What is this odd sensation? I just didn't feel locked into like I used to. And then I discovered the podcasting. And I thought at first, oh my God, podcasting is for amateurs. I do radio production. I do things that need to be heard on the air, transmitted live. And I started giving podcasts a chance, and I stumbled across the Forcecast, which was a new show that had just been 2 months into production. And I listened to it and I thought, wow, these guys are, number one, speaking to me as a Star Wars fan in a very positive and educated way. And number two, these guys got great chemistry. And I'm talking about Jason Swank and Pete Nadel.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so I listened to those shows, and it was a funny period of time for me because my wife, Wendy, she had knee surgery, and she was in the hospital on the north side of the city, and I live out in the southwestern suburbs. So it's a haul for me to drive through downtown Chicago to go see her in the hospital where she's getting the surgery. So I found myself in the car a lot. I found myself wanting to take a break from radio, just because I was tired with the same old programming that I was hearing. And I'd even have an iPod. I didn't, you know, there's all these eyes now, iPod, sure. iPad, iTunes, but I didn't have an iPod back then. So I actually burned some of these Forcecasts onto CD, and I would listen to them in my car, and I'm driving around back and forth, you know, even shuttling the kids out to the north side to go see mom and still listening to these podcasts. And I was hearing something I really liked after about a week. And I thought to myself, number one, this could be your entry into the fan community. This could be your way to give something back for all the hours of entertainment you got lurking and all the other weird things I was doing. So I thought, this is your opportunity to give something back. And you'll meet people. So when you go, I knew Star Wars Celebration 4 was going to be happening in LA that next year. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool to be able to say hi to people you met online at this thing? You might even make some friends. Who knows?
Crazy.
And then the other thing was, this will bring me back to my fandom. This will give me something that will re-spark me as a fan. And that's what I really need at this time. So I reached out to the guys and offered my friendship and what I said, whatever you need from me. I hear where you guys want to be, but I don't think you're there yet. I think I can help you get to where you want to go. So I just started helping Jason Pete with the weekly podcast, offering ideas, giving them audio clips, which is something that they were kind of shaky about using up until the point I started giving them ammunition. And then hosting my own shows, interview specials, music specials, whatever. And that really, to get back to the question, what has I been talking about, 10 minutes? What has it done for your fandom?
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, specifically podcasting for me, you mentioned the core is still the same, but as far as the way you're suddenly, face it, you have a platform and you have the ability to communicate with a huge community of Star Wars fans. It's different.
Yeah, well, it's very different, and the networking alone has been amazing for me, and the friends I've been able to make, and the contacts I've been able to make, because I approach it as a professional with my mind, because that's what I am, but with my heart, I'm a fan. And I find that all the connections I've been making, both professionally and friendship-wise through the podcast, we all have that foundation as Star Wars fans. One great story I love telling is about a time I was in L.A. with my friend Kyle Newman, who's the director of Fanboys. Mm-hmm. And he's a regular contributor to the Forcecast, or... he had been.
Sure. And we can expect to see him again, I hope.
Yeah. You'll be hearing from Kyle before you know it, let's just say. But yeah, Kyle, you know, he's a dear friend of mine. And I was in LA and I was hanging with him. And his wife is actress Jamie King, as you guys know. And we were at a photo shoot for Jamie at the Chateau Marmont on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. And we were on the rooftop of this penthouse, and it was amazing. You know, we're just looking out over a beautiful day, Hollywood Hills. You know, this is a day at the office for Kyle Newman. But for me, I was just eating it up. And there was a girl with the crew. She was actually a friend of Jamie's. Really cute, very friendly, young French girl. Thick accent. And she comes up to me, and she's smoking a cigarette. And she takes a puff of it, and she goes, "So, how do you know Kyle and Jamie?" And she's, you know, puffing on a cigarette, and I looked her right in the eye, and without missing a beat, I just went, "Star Wars!" And it was like the greatest moment. Excuse me? But it was just a really, you know, I'm like, how do I know these people? I know them through Star Wars. These are the connections I've been able to make, and it's been just wonderful as far as friendships and buddies and then collaborators.
Sure.
You know, we get to work on podcasts together, or audio dramas like Smuggler's Gambit, or short stories, or whatever we have that we're working on. It's always connected to Star Wars. And that's what I think is the coolest thing in the world.
Well, and as I see you continue that kind of professional approach, but as you say, with the heart of a fan, it really shines through. And it is two-way communication, podcasting, and it is, it's not something, it's the, as the internet has aged, this kind of interactive two-way communication is there. But I also often see a kind of leftover, in my opinion, from even before my time on the internet in the early 2000s and before, this kind of two-way, anonymous kind of way people relate online. And I keep seeing this is just an observation of where there seems to sometimes be a clash where people can be very, very vocal, opinionated, and sometimes mean-spirited. And this also happens in the Star Wars community. And not to be on a negative note, but I know with you guys having a platform and doing a show regularly and doing as good of a job, but having those kinds of opinions, you often can kind of encounter that, I'm sure. How do you approach doing a mainstream Star Wars show in this new age of new media when there are so many different opinions that are bound to clash? You can't please everybody.
Well, opinions are like buttholes. Everyone's got one. And, you know, I mean, to each his own. That's what makes life so great is, you know, the variety. That's what brings great collaborators together, our different opinions, people coming from different places, being able to throw your cards down on the table and say, well, this is how I feel. And then if it's worthy of debate, it's debatable, or you'll hit the nail on the head. You can't make everyone happy all the time. And my philosophy in life is trust your gut and believe in yourself. And if you say something, stick by your guns and stand up for what you believe in. So, I mean, you know, when it comes to something like Star Wars, I mean, we're just talking about entertainment-based opinions, you know?
Sure.
I mean, it's all based in entertainment, and this is something we do for fun. So I think that as long as the debate is healthy and there's no mudslinging or name calling going on, then yeah, that's all fine. I mean, obviously we've stuck our toes in that water in the past about, you know, certain things we have opinions about on Star Wars, and people will disagree with us about it. But it's always interesting to hear what the other side of the coin is too.
Sure. And,
you know, different strokes for different folks. People come from different areas. People come from different bases of philosophy and religion and economy. And
yeah. And it's funny how that all often just really collides in something. It is an entertainment, but I think Star Wars so often represents with different people from different political spectrums and religious spectrums have really read into it what they see.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the way I kind of approach it, especially with Star Wars, is it's kind of like sports talk radio. We're talking the same language. We're talking about a subject matter we're intimately familiar with. And we can speak openly and not dumb things down for our audience because we understand that we're all consuming the same topic matter, yeah, whether it be a football game or an episode of the Clone Wars. People come in with their own opinions, their own analysis, their own perspectives, and that's what makes it fun.
See, my roommate, he absolutely hates the New Jedi Order, which is, I self-admittedly, that's my favorite series. And I have such a blast just trying to get him to look at it in a different light, you know. And he's like, oh, and those Vons, they exist outside the Force. And I'm bringing up other concepts like the Ilsmeri and things like that and trying to get him to look at it in a different light, you know. But, yeah, it's the back and forth. You know, you mentioned something about losing your fandom, and that resonates with me because there are multiple times through the 10 or so years that I've been in the background of fandom where, you know, you feel like, man, is it just this one work or am I losing the desire, you know? And when you're as invested as fans like us are, that's a scary place to be, man. And to find anything that helps you get back into that point where you're like, yeah, this is what I love. This is what I remember. You know, that's what I too have. I love about podcasting.
Yeah, well, I was afraid I was growing up when I started to feel like Star Wars was slipping away from me.
Big panic.
Well, no, when did
it happen? So I didn't want that to happen. So I'm like, be immature. That's just something that, you know, it is kind of a fountain of youth. And that's something I've said before about Star Wars is it connects you with your inner child. And that's important in this day and age with all the stress in the world going on and bad economy and terrorism. And Mark, you bring up the Yuuzhan Vong and the New Jedi Order. And I remember when those books were coming out, that was about the time, you know, we're talking 2001 when... Yeah. You know, the Al-Qaeda stepped forward and bin Laden and stuff. And you were hearing a lot of similar communication coming from them that you were reading in the pages of the Star Wars book with them referring to Americans as infidels and, you know, how there was just that sort of separation based on core philosophies and religions. And yeah. I was just making that connection. I'm reading these books going, my God, the Yuuzhan Vong or the Al-Qaeda of Star Wars. This is just, you know, horrific. And they also, you know, how the Yuuzhan Vong were immune to the Force. It seems in many ways, these terrorists that came up out of the Middle East, like the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, they were immune to our sense of moralities too. And that's what was the scariest part is that you can't negotiate with people like that. There's no reasoning with people like that. And that's why, yeah, you know, the Vong was just such a serious, hardcore threat to the Star Wars galaxy. My only problem with that New Jedi Order series is that by the end, it really started to lose its steam.
Oh, yeah. The last four books.
That's when they lost me. And I ended up just skipping to the final hardcover and reading that and just filling in the blanks about that living planet and all that stuff. You know, I can understand why people would get frustrated with New Jedi Order, especially now that it's completed. You're looking at it going, wow, 20 books. 20 books.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am right now. I have not read it yet. Mark's been working on me,
though. And the characters aren't life hanging in the air like they were at that time. I mean, you know, Chewie dies right out the gate. I remember that entire series going, is Han and Leia dying? Are they dying right now? I mean, what was it, Traitor, where the Falcon's trapped inside the Coruscant, the Senate building, and you just think it all gets destroyed. I thought that was it. I'm like, they checked them out. They really checked them out. But yeah, now you know it's not going to happen. But yeah, that was one of those times where I was like, oh man, anything is possible in my Star Wars.
Well, when you begin a 20-book series with the death of Chewbacca, it really makes you, you know, take stock of what the actual threat is. If Chewie can get wiped out, then any of these characters could. The thing about the death of Chewbacca, that was spoiled for me by Entertainment Weekly, who put it in their, you know, they have snarky top 10 list, at least they did back in the day. And they put in the death of Chewbacca, and that was like the week the book came out. I didn't even have time to crack the cover, and I'm just scanning through this magazine in a dentist's office, and I see that, and I was just like, what the f-? Everyone in the dentist's office heads turn. but I couldn't believe they spoiled it, because I had no idea it was coming. I would have much rather seen it unfold in the pages of the book, but so I was able to brace myself for that, and I was like, huh. So they dropped a moon on him. All right.
Yeah. Well, now, one thing that you said, Jimmy, that I really like is comparing Star Wars to sports, but Star Wars like sports is such a unifying thing for us to all be sitting here talking about something that we are all so passionate about and really enjoy. And, you know, I have people on my Facebook page, for instance, of entirely different political viewpoints. And, you know, in the stress of these times and the arguments that you might have over politics or religion or any hot button topic, but they can still come together as friends and discuss Star Wars. And that's a really amazing thing. So I'm quite excited to be here discussing Star Wars with all of you guys.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That is a great thing, you know, and I mean, I'm connecting to you guys. I'm in Chicago. Mark's in Oregon. You guys are in, where are you guys?
We're confused. Right now we're in Tennessee. We're
shift all over the
place.
We're
usually in Georgia. We're home based out of Georgia.
Now, you probably have moved around a lot in your childhood with, you have a military family, don't you?
Well, actually, no. Well, my grandfather was military. My parents were missionaries. And so, yeah, I actually grew up in of all places, Peshawar, Pakistan. Fun fact. So I wasn't even, and I've told the story before, but I wasn't even in Western culture, much less aware of pop culture movies, much less aware of Star Wars until at least the early 2000s. Which it's weird. Because as a 21-year-old guy, talking to you who's from the original trilogy era, it's to me just astounding, especially how visually apparent it is at something like a Star Wars celebration, where you see the cross-generational effect of these films. And there are very few film franchises that I feel do that well.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like classic rock. You know, when I was in high school and college, I would always go to the guys I knew who were older than me, and I'd be like, so you saw Led Zeppelin in 75? Tell me all about it, you know? And so now it's fun because I find the younger generation of Star Wars fans will occasionally ask us about, you know, living life in the 70s when Star Wars hit, and then going through those dark times when really there was nothing about Star Wars that you can find, and how that sort of developed me into the fan that I am today. It's almost like those dark times were a necessary time to sort of, because it was so intense in the 70s and 80s when those films were coming out. I wasn't the only kid I knew who was completely consumed by Star Wars. Star Wars was a fact of life to all kids growing up in that time. We shared much more. There wasn't the variety you get today. You didn't have all the platforms of entertainment.
Sure.
Most kids all watched the same TV shows, and we saw the same movies. And when Wizard of Oz would come on once a year on CBS, that was an event. And we would all talk about it the next day in school. Every kid would watch the $6 million Man, and we'd go to school the next day and talk about Steve Austin. So when Star Wars hit, and every kid you knew, we would just keep returning to the movie theaters that summer because it didn't go away. And every time we go back, we would just, you know, become more and more solidly entrenched into the galaxy, and we all started speaking the same language at the same time and started collecting at the same time. It was a very level playing field for fandom. And then to go through that dark time in the late 80s, early 90s, where there was no Star Wars, that was important too, because it really helped you recharge your fandom battery and refocus, think about the possibilities of the future. But like, you know, we just went through a long period of time where we had no idea what the future of Star Wars films would be. And just recently we learned that, yes, there's going to be more Star Wars films.
Yeah.
Woo! Think about, you know, going through that for more like, you know, 10 years or 12 years.
Well, and I can't imagine, because it seems to me like people on some level made a choice during that long, dark period, and that was whether or not they were going to maintain a connection to their childhood, you know, that fountain of youth concept. And then a lot of people who moved on and, you know, are very bitter about Star Wars and the direction it's taking. And we don't even have time to get into all that, maybe on a later date. But I would feel terrible if we didn't get to it before the end of the interview, because I know you're a busy guy, Jimmy. Got to head out in a few minutes. But I want to touch on it. You guys have been podcasting for 7 years, and I've been listening for much of them, as I established at the beginning. But I want to ask you about Rebel Force Radio. And the genesis of it, it's a very recent change. You guys have out your first two episodes. Listened to both, thought they were both fantastic. And if you guys aren't, we'll definitely link everything up in the show notes and in the text interview for StarWarsReport.com. But if you're not, you should be listening. And I just want to say this, Jimmy. What was the genesis? What was that decision where you and Jason, you decided to strike out on your own and begin a brand new era of Star Wars podcasting? Because my theory is, I'll go ahead and throw it out there, did Episode 7 have anything to do with that? Because there's this change in the air, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Wow, you know, you're pretty astute. Definitely the timing and the release of information about the future of Star Wars had us looking inward.
Sure.
And we were saying to ourselves, well, how do we want to continue to approach this? Do we want to continue to travel a path that's already been carved out for us? Or do we want to start fresh and find our own path and really go on our own adventure from the ground up? A fresh start. Along with a new start for Star Wars, we would be getting a fresh start as Star Wars journalists. I
sure.
love to throw that around. Hey, I'm a Star Wars journalist.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah. You like the sound of that? Let's unionize.
Oh, no. Well,
yeah.
Because
Airborne.
I don't know if you know this, Jimmy, but Bethany and I made a very similar decision about a year and a half ago where we had started doing some stuff with the U Cantina. And they're a great site. They continue on to this day. But we made the decision that we wanted to be, you know, and you guys mentioned it in your first episode, kind of the master of your own destiny. And I think you guys made absolutely the right decision, and I cannot wait to hear where you guys are going in the future.
Well, thank you.
Independence, I believe you said, Jimmy. That struck me immediately. You were mentioning something about how you guys were going to be able to answer your emails, and it would be you guys actually answering the emails. And I was talking to Riley and Bethany. I had something similar when I started on EUcast, because that wasn't my show. I was just a host on the show, and I never got the emails. I'd always find out about them later. And then when we started, you know, the Star Wars Report, and then later Star Wars Beyond the Films, to be able to have that kind of interaction was really cool, you know. And hearing you guys have that same similar thing, the word independence really came across, you know, that's definitely something important about podcasting.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you have the affordability to be independent.
Sure.
I've been working my whole life in professional radio. Not only do I have to answer to other producers, program directors, management, general managers, all the way up the corporate ladder, but we're also under restrictions from the FCC. And we're under restrictions about time, and you have to play commercials and do all these things. And so I look at podcasting as an escape from that kind of thing, something that I can have fun with. And mold into the way, shape, and form that I want to see, the show that I want to listen to. And I'm not saying that that's not stuff we weren't doing in the past.
Sure.
But yet we were still under that umbrella, and it was time to hop in a land speeder and take off from your uncle's moisture farm, go hook up with some good buddies at the cantina, hop on a ship, and take off on your own adventure. And that's what we really wanted to do at this time, is just take total accountability for everything that we do, present everything we do through unfiltered lenses, and really find a way to connect to all Star Wars fans and not just be sort of insulated into being associated with certain websites or certain
sure.
individuals, things of that nature. Let's just go out on our own and see what happens. And I feel like the air is very fresh, And the guys at TFN and Rebel Scum are still like family to me. But sometimes you just have to, you grow up and it's time to move on and go find your own adventure.
Certainly. Wow. That's and I think you guys made absolutely the right decision. Bethy and I, we certainly haven't looked back, and it's awesome.
I am wondering, though, what excites you the most about moving into Rebel Force Radio? What are you super excited for with the show?
Like I said before, it's ours. It's ours, and we're starting it up from the ground floor. And just to see the growth, to have the connection with the core listening base that apparently has followed us, which I'm very relieved about. And just, you know, the sense of adventure. It's a gamble. What's going to happen? How are we going to do this on our own? Like I said, we essentially were doing it on our own before, but under that umbrella, and now we're just completely out there. It's just us. Yeah. There's no pretense. There's nothing, no one we can hide behind. There's no safety net. So we get the chance to take total accountability for something that we eat, drink, and sleep and are very passionate about, and that is Star Wars and Rebel Force Radio. And that's about it. It's all about just taking accountability and gaining your independence and moving forward, looking forward to the future of Star Wars, looking forward to the future of Clone Wars, Star Wars sure. books and collecting and everything. And while we don't always hit those topics on each and every show, they're essential to my fandom. And that's just something I like to share with as many other Star Wars fans as possible.
Awesome, man. And if you aren't listening to what is now Rebel Force Radio, or haven't checked it out in a while, and I know a lot of our listeners haven't, guys, by all means, head over. You guys are on Facebook. You've got your first couple episodes out. I'm sure the website will be up soon, if not by the time this goes live. So I'll tell you what, Jimmy, it's been awesome to talk to you, and thank you so much for giving us some of your time tonight.
Oh, you bet. You guys do a really good job with your show. I like how you keep it positive. And you guys don't dwell in the negative, and you certainly are very knowledgeable Star Wars fans and a great voice for Star Wars fandom.
Well, thanks
man. Really appreciate it. All right. Jimmy Mack, the one and only host of Rebel Force Radio, thank you so much for coming on, man.
You bet, guys. Thank you.
HK-47.
There he was.
Ready.
I was ready.
Ready.
All right, this is all staying in the episode.
The Maxter there at the end of the episode?
I'm sorry, what, Mark?
Did you see I slipped in the Maxter there at the end of the episode?
Oh, yeah. I don't know if it made it into the final edit. But yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're back in the same evening of having just interviewed the wonderful and talented co-host of the Forcecast, Jimmy Mack. And man, that was awesome. Yeah. Really, really enjoyed it. And we have a little bit left in this episode, so don't go anywhere. We're going to talk about the latest episode of the Clone Wars, Imminence, for a little bit, and then whatever else happens to come up in the next 20 minutes or so before we have to head out, whether it be, well, I guess there's been a lot of Episode 7 news and a lot of stuff going on, man, in the Star Wars community. So let's just talk about whatevs. We'll talk about whatevs. Sound good, guys?
Oh, my.
All right, so Clone Wars Imminence is the last episode that just aired, and
we see the return of Darth Maul and the more savaging
Mark,
done
and you
by
got
the press.
I did my own Freudian, so I can't proceed with the Clone Wars. Host of former Forcecast, now the fantastic Rebel Force Radio. I would shoot myself if I were doing that.
Oh, you really did
say
that.
I know,
I
had the gun. I'm like,
whack.
Shoot you in the back right now.
And I went for 30 minutes with great effort, to do that, and then I just blew it in the first few minutes.
You've been listening to them for
years now.
More than 4 years. 5 years almost.
So yeah, give me a break, guys. Give me a break. No,
he was just awesome to talk to Jimmy.
Yeah, seriously,
a lot of fun. Just talking Star Wars and Rebel Force Radio. Then we should totally call it Rebel Forces Radio just to annoy him like Dave Filoni.
Ah, yes. Speaking of Dave Filoni. And then you brought it full circle. Let me try that again. Bethany, you brought it full circle in that Dave was on Rebel Force Radio on that first episode. You guys should definitely go listen to it. And in that, he mentions, all right, playtime is over. The supervising director of the Clone Wars essentially just called the first half of Season 5 playtime, which blows my mind, A, that happened. But I think, because he's being real, because it's these episodes are not, I don't think, are for hardcore fans. The droid episodes.
Yeah. Well, it's showcasing a different part of Star Wars.
The Young Jedi episodes. Yeah, so it's a different way, and it's not for, I think, the hardcore Star Wars fan of the greater mythology. And so here we are. Things are getting serious. Maul's back. Black Sun is here. Mandalorians are being Mandalorians. For the first time ever, we see a large group of Mandalorians on screen being all Mandalorian. And being someone who's very invested in that culture, Mark, what did you think of that, of seeing a whole battalion, I guess, group?
Oh, man. This is, unit. I think, for the EU fanatic in me, this is the bacon that I've been waiting for, man. I mean, it's all nice and crisp, and it smells it's right before it gets burnt. You know, it's like it's the best prime. I'm salivating over here. I can't wait for the next two episodes. And what it's going to, for some, rectify, bring back to what we thought we knew originally before we had to unlearn what we knew to make way for new stuff. And, you know, by that, I mean, the new Mandalorians are in the process of getting shoved out. At least that's where I'm thinking it's going. I mean, it seems to be that we're going to finally watch the warrior cast take back Mandalore, and we're going to see Mandalore be left the way we've known it from the EU before the Clone Wars cartoon came around. So this is an exciting moment just in the aspect of watching the two universes kind of try to work their way back into one again.
Yeah. Well, and if I may add, I may not be quite as big of a fan as Mark is, but Riley, if you'll remember, I have read most of the Karen Travis novels. I was a big fan of her works, loved her take on the Mandalorian culture. Boba Fett's always been one of my favorite characters in Star Wars. Boba Fett. But I think I was one of those unusual people who, while loving that portrayal of the Mandalorian culture, I didn't feel betrayed by
the Clone
Wars take
on it. Yes, Bethany, it was weird, because when that episode of the Clone Wars in Season 2 aired, portraying pacifism in the Mandalorian culture, you didn't scream or
Riley
kind of
gives me this sidelong look, and he's like, so when are you going to blow up now?
You didn't pull out your hair, you didn't fast, you didn't dress in a duffel bag, what is it, a brown sack of cloth, potato sack, that's what I was thinking of, and cover yourself in ashes or anything like that.
Oh, now you're just having fun. But see, I thought, this could totally happen. A planet and a culture never stays exactly the same.
Sure.
You have, like, the French Revolution, and then even after that, you have a new king. For those of you who have seen the new, how do you pronounce it?
Just call it Le Miz.
Le Miz. Okay, Le Miz. Call it the cool
name. Which, by the way, the cheap, easy American way that we don't know how to pronounce it, so just everyone I hear is just calling it Le Miz.
We need Jimmy back on to do his French accent.
Ah, yes.
Yes. Okay, but if you watch Le Miz, one of the characters in it, and I haven't seen it, but one of the characters mentions how, you know, we had the revolution, and then we have a new
La
king.
Revolution.
So they go the from, let's rebel against all monarchy, and then just a little while later, they go back to having a king. So I could see in the Clone Wars, kind of taking a step back, I can totally see this happening. I could see Dave Filoni running with this, and then Mandalore completely collapsing.
Well, that's what we've always wanted to see, because I haven't heard a single person who says, you know what? I really think that pacifism fits well into the mythology of Mandalorian. You know what? When I see Boba Fett in Return of the Jedi, I think pacifist. I don't hear anybody saying that.
Well, and you can see Duchess Satine is always valiantly battling in a very pacifist way. Is always
Was that violently battling?
No,
I believe is what you said.
No.
Violently.
No.
Valiantly.
Valiantly struggling against the idea that her culture has to be the traditional Mandalorian / Death Watch type of violent culture. And you can see that it's a real struggle. She is struggling for the heart and soul of her planet. And right now, you might see her as winning. But the seeds of war have been planted. And you can see in the long run... I don't think the future
looks too bright for our dear Duchess.
I know, yeah. And I like the Duchess's character. We may have a disappointment coming up soon. Anyway, so just as someone who has liked both the books and the Clone Wars, I think in a way this shows us, give the Clone Wars a chance, even if it does things that you don't like. Give the EU a chance, even if it does things you don't like. There's always a little part of real Star Wars, you might say, sure, in all of Star Wars.
All we are saying is give Star Wars a chance.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, but kind of this episode, we kind of wandered off on a tangent.
This episode, right out the gate, the first thing I loved the most was how they were floating in space, Maul and Savage, in their little wrecked escape pod right from the last episode, and they're all frozen and they get found. I don't know why, and you guys aren't going to be able to relate to me on this one, but it reminded me of Out of Gas, the episode of Firefly. It was just a really fun episode in Firefly, and... seeing them all frozen like that when they showed up on the ship totally brought that episode right back to me, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I really liked about this episode was seeing Maul come into his own. He has moved from someone who just kind of was like, okay, we're going to kill Obi-Wan. Let's go after him now. Maul has a master plan, and he has turned into a master manipulator. He... has a singular focus on making something happen.
This reminds me of somebody.
Yeah, it totally reminds you of Sidious.
Yep.
100%.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, Sidious trained Maul, but...
Somebody was paying attention in school. Little Sith school.
Yes, yes, he was.
Sith school.
But the way he makes this stuff happen, I mean, okay, picture yourself as Maul. The very difficult
picture.
Maul. Picture, you're Maul. You want to kill Obi-Wan.
Tatooine is sparsely populated, Master.
You're Maul. You want to kill Obi-Wan. You want to kill Obi-Wan. You want to have power, and you want to have vengeance. Instead of just going on a rampage, which perhaps the Maul of the old would have done, you start putting this elaborate plan into action. But you're not just scheming behind the scenes. You're not just the master schemer. You're also acting on your plans. This guy has focus. This guy has determination. He goes out. He's going... meeting up with Black Sun isn't exactly this like, oh, let's just swing by Black Sun and see what they think these days. You know?
How you doing, Cheezor?
What's cool about that, though, and the part I love the most about it is Maul has already had a run-in with Black Sun in the comics. He's the one that single-handedly went in and crippled him the first time.
I
thought that was really interesting that not only has he crippled him once, now he's coming in and he's taking the reins.
Yeah, not exactly.
The way he did it was so cool.
Was that the same conference room that was in Episode 3 when Anakin killed the Nemoidians, where Maul went in and slaughtered a bunch of the...
Let
me skip into it.
Because I don't think that was Mustafar.
Well, it's like he...
Maybe it was designed by the same modular building company.
No, it was Mustafar. Sorry, totally, yeah.
Yeah, it was Mustafar. Uh-huh. Well, because in a span of about 10 minutes in the middle of the episode, like the middle act, really about 6 minutes, so much happens, and that's so refreshing.
Mixing it up with Zanbar, so...
Oh, okay. Well, but so much happens. Not only does Maul run in and completely decapitate the leadership, quite literally, of Black Sun, but they also basically destroys the huts. I mean, when you see, even Luke Skywalker has a measure of respect for the power of the huts.
Everyone has a measure of respect for the power of the huts.
Which is a diminished power by the time of the original trilogy, because you get the idea that the Empire is cracking down on smuggling and that kind of trade. So I kind of imagine this whole Hutt clan is very powerful, and that kind of goes back to the Clone Wars movie where they talked about the Jedi made a deal with the devil. They made a deal with the Hutts to where we're going to give let you use the Republic hyperspace lanes, for we know you're going to smuggle some naughty stuff, my friends. we know you're going to do that, but we need the resources of the Hutts. So as I think this was in a, I actually saw this explicitly in a interview Dave Filoni was doing or something for StarWars.com, where he was saying, now it's coming back to bite you 5 seasons later.
Well, and actually, Dave Filoni said something similar on Rebel Force Radio, too.
That's probably what I was thinking of.
Yeah. But, okay, so here's what's so exciting to me. Maul is so different because he's breaking the mold. Don't cough now. I'm talking.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just realized I was about to give Bethany the most. All right. Peel the curtain back. Usually, Bethany and I both have to mute the microphones when I'm going to cough because I'm still getting over some kind of bronchitis. But
yeah. We did it through the whole interview.
But Bethany's talking, so I can't cough. So
because I want to keep talking.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the reason I find this so intriguing is because Maul has broken the mold. He is now a force that the Sith have to reckon with, the Jedi have to reckon with. Okay, the Hutts, like Riley said, their power is beginning to diminish, but people don't really see them that way. The Jedi are stuck in a rut as to how they approach this war. The Sith, frankly, are kind of stuck in a rut. Sidious has his master plan, and it does eventually work, but he does stick with it, and you can see he is sometimes afraid of being revealed. He takes all of these steps all the time. Don't want to get revealed. Don't want to be revealed, because then my whole plan will fall apart. Maul is just single-mindedly doing what it takes. He will change himself. He will change Savage. He is going after his goal, and nothing, absolutely nothing is going to stop him. Whereas you see the Jedi, they're like, we need those hyperspace lanes. Okay, well, I guess we'll have to deal with the Hutts. And they do that. And you can see the Jedi's power is fading in the Clone Wars. We're already to that point. We're beyond that point in some ways. And you can see that Sidious is just kind of sticking with the same old, same old. Here's my plan, and I'm going to cackle evilly about it and follow it, but I know it's a master plan and it will work. And the Separatists are just still kind of fighting to really have a place in the war. We haven't seen much of the Separatists other than their droid army recently. We just see droids show up and start shooting. We haven't seen much of the leadership. And look at where all of these beings end up. The Separatists are defeated, and then their leadership is slaughtered by Anakin. The Jedi are defeated and almost wholesale slaughtered. Sidious is defeated and killed. And the Jedi do eventually rise back to power, but after years and years of their order being shattered and almost non-existent. Maul, that's not happening to him right now. We don't know the end game of Maul, but right now, if we didn't have any future history of Star Wars, you would think that Maul stood a chance to be the one standing at the top when all of this comes to an end.
We are the true lords of the Sith.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so excited about what they've been doing with Maul. I will admit, though, when the Mandalorians put him in the regular human-looking legs, I was kind of bummed. I'm like, oh, there goes my Visions link, unless we find some other way to put him back in those other legs.
Well, I think they're pretty interchangeable at this point because, I mean, they are metal. Uh-huh. He'd be wearing some skinny battle droid legs.
I'm going out to the disco club. I need my John Travolta legs.
I'll take it.
Oh,
I want those legs. Wow. Well, so much happening in this episode. It's amazing. It's awesome. And I'll tell you what, my favorite thing about it is just you do get that sense that Dave said, playtime is over.
Yep.
Katie Sackhoff. I mean, come on.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
How many armors did we see that were like hers? I noticed that there was at least one, if not two, other female Mandalorians in very similar, like, owl-looking armor. And I thought that was interesting because I liked her armor originally. I was like, okay, cool. She's got her own little owl-type thing going on. And then to see others wearing a similar armor, I was like, ooh, what's the story there? Like, okay, are they mimicking her because she's awesome, or are they all mimicking someone else that's famous in the past? I mean, because, you know, from the EU side of things, the armor is a big part of the Mandalorian culture. I mean, they'll pass that down and stuff, or you'll get like an arm an arm gauntlet here or a breast piece here, you know, a thigh piece there from a different ancestor. And, you know, maybe they're mimicking some old past Mandalorian warrior. Maybe maybe it's Katie's character. Bo-Katan.
Bo-Katan. Yeah, I mean,
maybe it's her herself that's just so awesome that they're mimicking to be like her. Maybe that's her daughter's. I don't know. But when I saw the similar armors there, and they were all, I believe they were all standing together at one scene, that's when it dawned on me. I was like, ooh, wonder why. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I was just looking into things too much like I normally do. But I think by doing that, though, that's where you find a lot of really cool story potential.
Well, yeah, and I think the Mandalorians do have a set enough history to where there is a story behind that.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's random.
It's so awesome to see Jon Favreau as,
Pre Vizsla.
Thank you, Pre Vizsla, where he has that weight of family. What's the word I'm looking for?
He has a history.
Yeah, definitely. The weight of family history.
A lineage.
Thank you, Mark. This is why we keep you around. It's that weight of family lineage of that warrior past. And when he pulls the sword, you do get the idea that this sword has indeed killed many Jedi before it.
And
to see
been in my family a long time, Sith Lord.
Well, and that's another thing. Maul leaves Pre Vizsla shaken and determined to murder him because Maul is a threat, and. Maul is okay. I'm fanning.
It helps
out
that it helps
Maul.
That I think that's a new word we invented now.
I know
it's instead of geeking out. Okay, Maul also helps that he's portrayed by Sam Witwer, who, by the way, I don't mind saying this on air. Of all the various actors that we've interviewed who've been involved with the show, or really actors that I've met at all at conventions and stuff, Sam Witwer is someone I have probably the most respect for as far as the way he does his craft, whether it's being human or the Clone Wars. He pours himself into his roles so well. And just meeting him in person in conversations both on and off air, you get that sense of where he's like, this is big. I mean, I'm portraying a significant character in Star Wars. You know, Star Wars is something you take seriously, and you get that sense that he works hard to take his craft seriously.
All his roles. I mean, that's for me is what I always think of. I think of his roles on Battlestar Galactica.
Sure, definitely.
You know, all these different shows he's been on where he's played villains and things like that, Doomsday and Smallville.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we were doing our interviews and I told my wife who we were interviewing, she kind of gave me this look like, really? And I'm like, yeah, just because he's so good at his job, you can't handle him because he's like Kevin Bacon. And, you know, when certain people are just really good villains, you just can't stand them because they're really good at it. Yeah, yes, well, this guy is that good.
Sam definitely has this. He has perfected the evil laugh in so many different ways. He can cackle. He can kind of chuckle and giggle hysterically all the way up into just the full out Sidious laugh, which he can do. He did the voice of Sidious for The Force Unleashed. Anyway, I am a huge fan of the direction that The Clone Wars is taking right now, and of Maul, and the way that he is being portrayed. It was nearly perfect story writing for everyone.
Oh, I cannot wait for the rest of it. Let's jump into our final thoughts. We're almost out of time. Mark, your final thoughts. What are you looking forward to in the final half of Season 5 of The Clone Wars?
I am totally looking forward to how Darth Maul gets into the armor. Another thing that we didn't mention that I want to talk about real fast is the whole Sith Lord angle. You know, when they asked, are you working for Dooku? The fact that Darth Tyranus hasn't been mentioned or Darth Sidious, and now we've got Darth Maul. I love the fact that so many different names are out there waiting to be found.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. There's so much potential. Cannot wait.
Okay, well, my final thoughts are, and there are many things that I'm looking forward to, but I'll mention this because I haven't touched on it. I'm very curious to see what happens to Savage. I almost feel kind of sorry for him, kind of worried about him, because he
is that you, brother?
He is completely outclassed by Maul in that.
He's a brute.
Savage likes Maul. Savage cares about Maul. I'm not 100% certain.
I don't
Maul
think
cares
the feeling is
him.
Mutual.
Yes. So.
Dead weight.
Savage, and a lot of weight there. Savage is useful to Maul right now, but what happens when his less crafty self is no longer useful to Maul? What else has he got to live for?
Yeah.
He has been going after his brother this whole time. What happens when Maul ditches him? I'm staring at you.
I know.
Answer me.
I guess that's my cue, and I was just started. I started thinking quietly about what does happen.
That is why you fail.
Well, that does it for this episode of the Star Wars Report, episode 76, if my count is correct. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, stay in contact with us. You can email us, starwarsreport@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail. Head over to starwarsreport.com. You'll see a nice little thing on the side where you can record your voice. Send us any questions that you have. You can also attach those to an email. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. It's just Star Wars Report. Super easy to find. And again, anything and everything that we do, including some news posts that I've started doing recently, as well as other written content, is over at starwarsreport.com. Huge, huge thank you to Jimmy Mack, formerly of the Force Cast, now journeying their way onto a brand new adventure, leaving their uncle's moisture farm, blowing up their Death Star over at Rebel Force Radio. Be sure to head to the show notes for this episode, and we'll link up all of their social media, the website. You guys should be tuning in. If you're a Star Wars fan, that show's for you. And by the way, just there's always we know so many great Star Wars podcasters, Star Wars bloggers.
Yeah.
There's room enough for all of us, and I think this interview, I don't mind saying, I think is just evident of we are better off together than separate. I think there was a president who said something like that at one point. But yes, united we stand. It's awesome to be part of the Star Wars fan community, and tonight has just been another one of those amazing experiences. Wow. That does it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. Thanks for coming on, as always, Mark. We really appreciate talking to you, and it's always awesome having you on.
And today we celebrate our Independence Day!
Will Smith. And Bethany, as always, pleasure talking to you, and we'll be keeping up with the latest of Clone Wars Season 5, Star Wars Episode 7
Maul,
news.
Maul.
And we'll also
in case you didn't know, I liked him.
And we'll also be keeping up with everything going on in the Star Wars fan community. Stay tuned right here at the Star Wars Report podcast and StarWarsReport.com. You guys have a fantastic week, and we will see you next time on the Star Wars Report podcast. And remember, Steve Boffins died to bring you this podcast. Tell you what, guys, one of the best nights I've had as a Star Wars podcaster. I don't know about you guys, but thanks.
Woohoo!
All right.
Can I hear a Force-a-luia?